You know, we live in just the best time for condiments. There's just so many of them
now. We do have a lot of choices of condiments, yes. Right?
I mean, obviously, you've got your classics. You've got your ketchup.
Yeah,
Your mayo, mustard.
Yes.
But then you've got all your variants. Like, there's so many different types of mayo right now. Like, you could get a garlic mayo.
Yeah.
Or a spicy mayo.
Yeah.
You could get a spicy ranch. You could do all... Yeah. You can get all sorts of things. Like, truly, we live in a sauce age. Greetings, strangers, queer and pleasant. I'm not Laura Kate Magnetdale.
And I'm not Jane Eyres Magnetdale. And welcome to another episode of Queer and Pleasant Strangers. It's a podcast where two queer trans women, that's us, we're wifey types, have a bit of a silly old catch-up about the media we've been consuming in the past week.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Yeah.
And, you know, within normal parameters.
Yeah, you're within the bell curve.
Within the bell curve, yes. How are you doing?
I'm sleepy and sniffly.
You are a little snuffle bean.
The little sleepy snifflies have caught me.
They have. You've been very busy, and now you've had
I've slowed down ever so slightly, and my body's gone, time to do all of the being tired and having an immune system that we put off while you were busy.
Mm-hmm.
And my body does this. I let myself get too busy, and as soon as I slow down, all of it catches up.
Oh, yes.
But we have been doing stuff since we last recorded
show. We've done many things.
Yeah.
We had a week off because of busyness.
I think I was giving
some of the aforementioned
I think
busyness.
It was because I was giving a talk in Woking when we last would have recorded, I think.
I think that was the one. You've done a few talks recently.
It's what have you been playing recently?
Played a few things. I got my big old 17x17x17 cube out for literally the second time. actually timed it this time. I got through it in 6 hours 35 minutes. It is very tough on the hand, even when you remember to leave it on the table and not try and hold it.
You did this time do so on like a solid surface rather than trying to lift it the entire time.
Exactly, right. Well, I mean, last time I ended up giving up and having to put it on a surface because my hand was hurting so much.
Yeah.
But this time it was like, okay, well, from the start, I noticed to do that and to take regular breaks every hour or so. And it was great because I was sort of doing that as we were passing off Final Fantasy VII Rebirth between us. So there we go. I've segued into a second thing.
Yeah, because we are cracking on with that. I don't know for certain, but I'm going to estimate we're about 70 odd hours into
something like that. Yeah.
Over maybe 3 weekends.
Yeah, 3 weekends.
Yeah. How are you finding Rebirth so far?
It's very pretty.
It sure is pretty.
We just got to Cosmo Canyon.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I say we finally got to the actual town rather than the canyon.
Indeed, we got to the place that one of our party members is from, and did a bunch of quest line there.
There's a beautiful set dressing around there.
There is indeed. There is also so many mini games in this game.
Mm-hmm.
So many very fully featured mini games in this game.
Yes, it's starting to give me, you know, Lord of the Rings was a trilogy. Let's make The Hobbit a trilogy vibes, and then dragging 3 movies out too long and people not really enjoying them. But that's not to say I haven't enjoyed it, but I have at this point started to get to a could we maybe have a bit more game than the filling of all of these mini games.
I mean, we could just walk away from some of the mini games.
We could,
but we won't.
Well, the thing is, we're going to get to a point where the thing is going to end and we will be like, well, now we've got to wait however many years for the next part of this forced trilogy. And, like, the plot that we have seen has been fascinating.
That it has.
There's been some fantastic ideas with regards to the 3D versions of some of the characters.
Yeah.
I'm thinking particularly of Dio. Person who runs the gold saucer that just have to make their titties dance every time. There's been some like really fascinating ideas about how you sort of make characters suitable for a fully 3D game.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some fun stuff with Costa del Sol and getting to dress everybody up in
their
fancy outfit. Barrett in his little sailor boy outfit. It's been interesting experiencing all this again, but in a very different way, and also playing a lot of mini games.
I am fascinated by this game consistently. I think that I don't dislike any of the changes that it has made. It is definitely its own thing that I think it's for the better, that it's not trying to be too beholden to being the thing that the original was, and it is letting itself be its own thing a bit. But my goodness, the confidence required to create what they have created is impressive. Yes. The fact that no one up the chain of people who had to approve budgets being spent said no to anything is beautifully... it's a wondrous thing to imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea what the first part made, and I would be curious to see if there has been a big drop-off between people who picked up the first one and then people who went... I fell off it for whatever reason, or when I need to try this.
Yeah, it is a really curious proposition, this remake trilogy.
Yes.
And I am desperately curious to see not only how Rebirth ends, because we have so many questions about Rebirth right now. There are so many plot threads that we don't know what the fuck they're doing with.
Not a clue.
Even as people who know the original Final Fantasy VII. Mm. But like, overall, this trilogy, I'm so curious what it is they're trying to do with it. Because that third part is still such a big question mark to me right now as to what it will be.
I mean, my best guess right now is that we're going to end up with some sort of Kingdom Heartsification of it. Like, there keeps being little vibes that feels like they're going to be very Kingdom Heartsy.
Mm.
And for better or worse, I guess we're going to find out what that is
next. I'm very much enjoying it, though. I'm having a great time exploring the world.
I've enjoyed it.
I know when it's done, I will have that sort of little gap in me of, but game done now.
What game do now? Isn't there an integrate for this as well? Or there will be at some point?
And there might be at some point, but at this point, I don't think anything's been officially announced.
Oh, I thought I'd seen it on the store page for it. Like, the deluxe edition includes Integrate, which isn't out yet.
I haven't paid enough attention.
But yeah, enjoying that stuff. Still, Queen's Blood is definitely the best game.
Oh, Queen's Blood is fucking fantastic. The deck that you built in Queen's Blood the other day, that was all about fill out the board as quickly as possible, and then, override certain cards, destroying the ones underneath them, and
having other cards that gain
skill every time you destroy a card.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a really fun little setup you built there, and I'm having a lot of fun with that one.
Considering how terrible I am at building decks for games usually.
Yeah,
I've built two really good decks for this game.
You've built a couple of really solid ones. I've been impressed with them.
Yeah. It means a lot coming from you, the expert in actually deck-building games.
Rebirth continues to be good, and hopefully one more weekend we will know how we actually feel about it once it's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, curious to see what's happening, what all of it means, and where they are going with this. I would be curious to know if from the outset of this trilogy, if they had... like a full roadmap in mind.
I imagine you can't really get away with the stuff that Remake did about we're gonna make some changes without having an idea of what those changes are, because I imagine that's driven by we have things in mind we want to do with this trilogy. I imagine Part 1 Remake exists the way it does because they had some degree of idea of what they wanted Parts 2 and 3 to be and needed to be allowed to shift that way. That's my gut feeling
on
it.
Fingers crossed. So what else have you played?
I can crack through a couple of quick bits that I've played. Mm. I played the demo for Princess Peach Showtime, the Switch game that's coming out. It might be out by the time that this goes out for general publishing.
Ah.
This is a Princess Peach-themed adventure on Nintendo Switch, where basically Princess Peach has gone to go see a play at a theatre, and some witch has done some magic, and now Peach has to go onto the stage in all the rooms of this theatre and transform into different forms and do little adventures. Obviously, it is a demo, and things might evolve in complexity or depth over time, but what I will say is... Nintendo has in the past done some really good stuff with games set on a canonically set on a stage. I instantly think of Paper Mario: The Thousand Year Door, where you had like this constant little crowd of people of enemies watching all the battles that happened.
Yeah, don't they give you like scores based on how well you do and
things like that? Sometimes they'll throw items at you from the crowd. Like it feels like a bustling room that a play is happening in.
Yeah,
this has none of that. It's sometimes the backgrounds look like they are manufactured props, but it doesn't make the most of the fact that it's in a theater on a stage the way that some other Nintendo games have done. Additionally, it is very simple, and maybe some of the ideas in the demo will come back in later levels and you'll get to keep exploring the ideas, but the problem is, right now, at least as far as the demo was concerned, it felt like each transformation barely got enough time to be introduced before it was over and you were moving on to a different transformation.
Right.
It didn't feel like there was proper breathing room for you to do interesting things that evolved the concept you'd been given.
Right, so it's not that you have control over what outfit you're wearing and what powers that will give you.
No, so like one of the first rooms you go into is sort of sword fighter Peach, and you have a little stage where you run around and you basically have one attack button and a jump button, and if you press the attack button just before an enemy attacks you, it'll do a little slow-mo attack, and that's the mechanics, and that is the one transformation available to you in that stage. And the stage is built around knowing you have that transformation, and you do some basic combat, and on we move, and now we go to a room where the only transformation you can use is Princess Peach, but she's a chef, and she's putting cake toppings on cakes this time. And I don't mind a game being simple. I've enjoyed really simple Nintendo games before.
WarioWare rides on its simplicity.
Possibly. Like, specifically, I was thinking of Yoshi's Crafted World. One of my favourite platformers on Switch. Very easy, simple game. It's not a challenging game, but it had a good amount of unique ideas of what to do with its mechanics.
And lots of exploration. Because even though the mechanics were simple, there was still a lot of, but have you found all of the things in the level?
Exactly. It felt like there was something to get your teeth sunk into, even with a very simple set of mechanics. This feels a lot shallower, a lot less like you can get into properly exploring with a mechanic. And obviously, I'll wait and see the full game, but it's not giving me hope that this is going to be for me.
How long's the demo?
Like three stages. It's maybe like 20 minutes.
Okay. I mean, we might find out come the full release that's like, hey, this is the tutorial for each of those outfits.
Possibly. I acknowledge that might be the case. Right now, it all feels very, here is a very tiny surface scratch and we instantly rush you onto something else.
Yeah, it's a very Nintendo demo of, you've got 20 minutes, that's it, that's what you get.
We played a thing that we've both played since we last did this.
Yes.
We both played something recently that we can talk about. We both played Snufkin Melody of Moomin Valley.
We did.
Yeah. How did you find this?
It's good. It's adorable. It's charming. I streamed it. I had a day and I was like, you know what? I really want to play this. I think it will be fun to do on stream. So I did like a 4-hour stream on a Wednesday afternoon and managed to get through the whole thing. It's beautiful. It's charming. I think I would kind of like to play it again maybe in a year or so, not on stream, to not have to have streamer mode on, because I'm told the music is even more adorable.
As someone who didn't play it in streamer mode, the music is fantastic.
Yes. I mean, the music is not bad as is, but I think I would be curious to see how that sounds.
Yeah, so for anyone who doesn't know, this is a sort of top-down adventure-y game where you play in a Snufkin, and you've left Moomin Valley for the winter, and you've come back, and There are cops in Moomin Valley.
There are cops in Moomin Valley. There is also some natural issues with things like a droughtage.
Yeah, nature ain't doing so good. There are cops now, and bits of nature have been, like, cordoned off with fences and made into private little parks.
Ooh.
With little signs being like,
with
don't have fun, don't
no kick noses, balls. No eyes.
Yeah, no, oh, don't have a little picnic here.
No tea.
Can't do that. And your job is to go and rip up all the signs in order to be like, no, fuck you, there are no rules, and all the cops then bugger off, because if there's no rules to enforce, they get bored, and go find out what's happened to nature, and why there's a Moomin dressed like a cop, and go help all the little creatures around the woods by usually playing music at them.
And meet all the other Moomins, and,
yeah.
And little Mai.
And it's very charming.
And Sniff,
yeah.
save Sniff's pet dog.
Yeah.
It's adorable, and... fight, question mark, giant crabs.
It's all
the combat is basically done by play instrument.
Yeah.
At a particular time.
It is just a little slice of pro-environment, it's just a little slice of pro-environment, anti-authority, love nature and stop commodifying it.
Mm-hmm.
And can always do with more of that.
Hell yes. Yeah, I had a really good time with it. I managed to get 100% of Moomin Papa's his masterpiece. Managed to get all of that. Managed to do all of the fetch quests for people. I had a really fun time. It manages to do really interesting things with like the same mechanics all the way through.
Yeah.
Things like there's the whole section where you've got the woodies. Sort of stuck on you for a while, and they stop you like going up ladders and things.
Yeah.
So you have to sort of find ways to trick them into different places so that you can try and escape and proceed with other stuff. And it's fascinating. And I think the only thing that I felt maybe didn't work quite as well as it could have, and maybe it was my lack of exploration, was there's a whole series of missions around finding food items for a muskrat.
Yeah.
And the muskrat will cook food, and you'll share the food together, and then you will get a stamina bar boost.
Yeah.
I found every single thing, apart from one mushroom that was hidden in some foliage.
Yeah.
Before I had managed to do, because it was from the first set of items.
Yeah.
And in many ways, that is, it feels a little cruel, because that one mushroom is literally hidden in some foliage.
Yeah.
It's a bit covered over, and you can't do any of the other stuff until you've done that first meal.
It is a little frustrating.
And it meant that I basically was 5-10 minutes from the end before I completed that whole series of missions. Because, first of all, I couldn't find the last mushroom I needed. And then after that, I couldn't remember where that person was. And they don't show up on the map.
Yeah.
So, ah!
I can understand how frustrating that would be.
But yeah, really enjoyed the story. Enjoyed the plot. It's very sweet and good and anti-authoritarian. And I just love the idea that if you remove all the rules, then the cops get bored and walk away.
Yeah.
Maybe we should try that. What about you? What else have you played?
I played a couple of new Playdate games.
Ooh.
One of them I can talk about real quickly is called Pull Frog.
Okay.
What if Tetris, but if you wanted to move the blocks left or right, you had to do so physically because you're a little frog inside the Tetris arena, and you can like hop up on the Tetris blocks and like jump up in the air and use your tongue to pull a falling Tetris block left or right. So you have fairly limited ability to move the Tetris blocks left and right, because it's quite hard to be a little frog and jump up and pull them the correct direction with your tongue.
Hmm.
So sometimes they'll land in the wrong place, and they'll land in a place where they won't quite fit into a gap.
Right.
But if that happens, you can use your tongue to attack bits of the Tetromino.
Okay.
To change the shape of it so that it can now fall down into a gap.
Ah.
So let's say you had a straight line gap, and you accidentally dropped a sort of R-shaped piece into it,
mm-hmm.
And like the one bit jutting off was stopping it falling down the hole. You'd use your tongue to break off the one sideways piece. Now it's a straight line, now it falls down the hole.
Ah.
It is tiny little platforming frog Tetris, and it's adorable, and it's a charming little thing. If you clear enough lines, you get little upgrades for your frog, and you to help you along your run. The other one I played, and this is one I've been waiting for a while, is I started playing Mars After Midnight, which is the a new Playdate original game by Lucas Pope, who is the Papers, Please, Return of the Obra Dinn, etc. developer.
The new, the new more adorable Papers, Please.
Exactly. This is this is what if Papers, Please, but you took away all of the stressful elements and made it about silly farting aliens in space. What if it was charming, silly, goofy Papers, Please in space? So you are an alien on Mars who is running like a community center that after midnight to 5 a.m. every night runs community events. And you're basically working as like the doorman, making sure that only people who are applicable to the event being run get let into the event.
Yeah.
You have this tiny little window to see out the door, and you can sort of peer up or peer down to like get a better view of an alien that might be too large to see by looking straight through the gap. And you're basically trying to work out, like, hey, this is Cyclops Anger Management class. Do you have one eye? And are you frowning? And you're trying to, like, open your little shutter, have a look. Is this someone who should be coming to Cyclops Anger Management? Nope. Okay, put the shutter down. Oh, yes. Well, okay, I'll let you in. And then in between letting people in, you are trying to use your many tentacles to clean, reorganize, tidy up the mess of the refreshments table that you've set up for all the attendees. And you're trying to help all these various groups of aliens with all their little problems. And you unlock little tools that will help you to run new kinds of events. Like, one of the first ones I unlocked was, what was it? Knife-wielding gnat knight? Where you have a magnifying glass and you have to, like, zoom in to be like, is that a tiny bug with a knife? Oh, no, that's a sort of serrated saw blade. That's not a knife. No coming in for you. There was one I did that was farty party, and it was purely, open the shutter, alien, are you going to do a fart? Because if you don't do a fart, I can't let you into the farty party. You're gonna do a little rumbly. Okay, you can come in. You've proven your hand for the party.
Went to Taco Bell earlier.
Exactly. It's all very, very silly, and like it's just like 10-15 minute little chunks of what do these aliens need? Go be a little door person while aliens do silly things. Mm-hmm. It's funny. It's silly. It works well on Playdate. I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Yay.
What about you? You played anything else recently?
Yeah, last thing I want to talk about is Not For Broadcast.
Ooh,
which
yes.
I managed to get, I want to say, like an hour or two into.
Mm.
And then I kept crashing in the same place.
So oh, no.
That was less than ideal. So the basic concept is, it's almost like a Five Nights at Freddy's thing. You've turned up, you're the cleaner at the TV studio, and you get a phone call going, hey, I've buggered off to the Seychelles or whatever. You're in charge of the broadcast now. Here's how you do it.
Yeah.
And you have four screens that you're switching between, and you're basically being told, like, hey, you want to switch between, like, the person doing the interview, the person answering questions, and then maybe, like, pop to a wide shot for, like, a reaction or something. And you'll get scored based on how well you managed to keep on the person that was speaking.
Yeah.
There's a couple where you have to do, like, rhythm edits.
Mm.
Like, one where basically there's, I think they're like a theatre troupe or something, and they do a song at one point during the thing, and you have to edit to the music. you don't have to, but you do get more points for editing to the music.
You're encouraged to edit to the music.
You do get a scale score for it. It's quite interesting because at the end of a broadcast day, that is output, and you can go and basically watch the thing you made as it was finalized. Because it's a lot to focus on when you've got four screens, two versions of the audio, the current audio and the audio in 20 seconds.
Yes.
So that you can work out where to bleep, because you need to do your own bleeping. You have to, like, queue up the adverts, and you have, like, a timer counting down. you put the videos into the players at the bottom, yeah. and then you set them to go at when the timer counts down, and then you have to cut back to the correct camera. Occasionally, you'll hear like a director in your ear going, "And we're cutting to straight to camera two after the ads," and yeah. you have to have been paying enough attention to that rather than just going amusing ads. But there's interesting things you can do if you are worried about missing any of the weird stuff that's happening in the background or slightly snarky comments from the newsreader or the director down on the show floor. Because between broadcast days, you can go back and you can watch all of the adverts for the day. You can only put 3 adverts out anyway, and you are given 4 videotapes,
yeah.
so you can watch all of those. And you've also got the option of, like, watching back. You can, like, mute various feeds and just watch one particular channel and find out what was being said in the background that maybe you missed.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating idea, and this is all wrapped up in, like, a weird, almost visual novel-y type background. You'll get, you'll sort of weirdly pan around, like, 3D environments of your home. And you'll occasionally have to make like conversational decisions, but you never really see any other people. Occasionally there'll be like audio that sounds like Christmas dinner is happening in the background or something, but then you're reading all this text. And it's interesting because obviously you start with first broadcast day, and that's a little bit in at the deep end. And then you have a couple of decisions to make, and then second broadcast day, and then there's just there was, like, tons of decisions, and before you know it, you're over day 100.
Yeah.
And you've only done 2 broadcast days. And unfortunately, broadcast day 3 is the one that keeps crashing on me.
Oh, no.
I've tried it, like, 4 times, and it crashes always during that day. I don't know if I've made a decision that the game was like, well, you shouldn't have done that. But the narrative is that a new government's just come in. They seem to be running on like very socialist ideals about redistributing wealth and basically making the rich pay their way. And there's a whole thing about that, like at one point you were asked to fill in a questionnaire and eventually you get like, hey, here's some money. You know that you were dead poor at the start of this game. Here's some money that we've redistributed from other people.
Yeah.
There's some other stuff going on with, like, related family members. And it seems like rich people, at least, seem to be seeing this whole thing as very oppressive and absolutely has to be stopped.
Oh, of course.
And I can't tell. The game feels like it's trying to be very neutral about the whole thing. Like, it's not telling you how to feel about any of these things. But at the same time, I get the impression that, despite that, it is still leaning like, oh, this government that are redistributing things is terrible, isn't it terrible? Look at them. That guy got pissed on his first day in office after getting voted in celebration, and oh, maybe they're not as good as they are. And there also seems to be like, I can't tell if it's supposed to be like children's like the ways of keeping your children occupied, like we're doing childcare and free activities.
Yeah.
Or if they're trying to say that we're basically indoctrinating the youth in some way. I can't tell what the general vibe is just yet, and I apparently at the moment right now cannot work out how to progress further because of crashes. But it's been a fascinating experience with this weird concept for an FMV game that is very overwhelming at times.
It seems that,
especially when you've got 2 audio channels and 4 video channels going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you, it seems to have a lot of different difficulty levels that you can mess around with. It's got good subtitling, which I appreciated. And yeah, enjoying it so far. I'm curious to see what the rest of it is.
Yeah.
Have you played anything else?
The main other thing I've been playing that I can talk about is Balatro.
Oh, this is the poker thing.
Yeah, this is the poker, but increasingly not like poker the more you play of it. So, Balatro is a deck-building roguelike that is kind of like poker, sort of, not really. So you start with a 52-card traditional deck of cards, and you're scoring points by doing traditional poker hands, and a more difficult to do poker hand will get you like a higher modifier. So like, you know, maybe this poker hand will be worth like 30 points plus whatever the values of the cards in your hand are, and because it was a full house, maybe it's worth times 5, so we'll multiply the result by 5, and you get a certain number of hands you can play during a given set, and a certain number of times you can discard cards and draw new ones, and you have to have scored a certain score to move on and keep going, and you're trying to get to the end of a run. But the big thing is that between each successful, you know, you successfully scored enough points, you can start spending money to buy alterations to your deck. And these come in a lot of different forms that very, very, very wildly change what your scoring conditions actually are.
Right.
So the big ones here are Joker cards. And Jokers will be fundamental changes to your scoring mechanics. These might be things like hearts and diamonds are treated as the same one suit, or any time you play a hand that has a spade in it, that spade gives you a times 4 multiplier to your score, or your multiplier for the hand you're playing increases by 1 for each time you've played that hand of cards during this run so far. So if you spam the same hand of cards, it's going to get an increasing multiplier added to it.
I've seen things like adding extra aces to the deck as well.
Yeah, this is the other thing you can do, is once you have like your scoring modifiers changed with these jokers, you can then start fucking around with the deck itself. And this comes in a couple of different ways. There are little booster packs you can get that will sometimes just be, here are new cards from a traditional deck of cards, so you can start skewing, you know, what is in the deck. You have Arcana and Tarot cards that can do modifications to your deck that might be things like, here is a hand of cards in front of you. If you use this Tarot card, all of the cards in this hand right now, all of those cards when they go back into the deck, will be a completely new suit, and maybe that's random and you don't know what suit they'll transform into.
Right.
Or select 3 cards from this selection and turn them into diamonds if you're trying to make a deck that's all about scoring diamonds.
Right.
Or sometimes it'll be like, destroy 2 cards from this selection. So if you're trying to get to specific cards, you can be destroying ones that aren't benefiting the build you're working towards.
Yeah.
On top of that, there's modifiers you can apply to the cards in your deck that might be things like, when this card is played, get extra money for buying things between rounds, or this card gives you a plus 20 modifier when it's played, but a 1 in 4 chance it'll be destroyed, or you get a modifier to your score if you keep this card in your hand rather than using it in the hand you play. And you are basically playing like 24 games of poker in which you increasingly fuck with the rules until the scoring does not resemble poker whatsoever. To give an example of a run I was doing yesterday that was successful, my jokers had things set up. So I had the one that made like heart. Basically, all my red suits were one suit and all my black suits were one suit.
Right.
I had one where every time I played a spade, I would get multipliers. So basically, any black card would get me like a score multiplier. Mm-hmm. So that was nice and easy to do. I had one that I mentioned before that was, if you play the same hand type, it increases your modifier. So I just kept playing flushes, which is just any 5 of the same suit, or in this case, any 5 black cards would do, and that was sort of pumping that modifier up. I had one that the first time in your that your hand contains a face card, your multiplier, whatever it's currently at, gets doubled, rather than adding like a 2 times multiplier, it doubles the whole multiplier. And then I had if you've played this hand already this round, triple the multiplier. So I was going like, all black cards, bam, 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 times 4 multiplier added each time. So I was at like, you know, a minimum 24 times multiplier, double that, triple that. And then I had a card that was like, one of your jokers activates twice. So I had that on the tripling.
Nice.
So it would triple my multiplier, then triple it again. So I had like 100 and something time, like 200 plus times my usual modifier, and was just playing the same hand over and over and over again.
Nice.
As the hand got stronger and stronger.
Nice.
It's weird little poker. It's poker where you go, cool. What do I want to be what scores points? Cool, forget every other rule of poker. This is what's important now. And make your little specialised Pokedex.
How's your win rate now? Because I know you just, the other day you said you finally got your second win.
I have a grand total of 2 wins. I have played a lot more than 2 games. Right now, my success rate is not super high, but I'm having a great time trying.
That's the important thing. I just wondered if you'd managed any more.
No. I have had 2 wins total, and one of them was literally yesterday, I think.
There's still time.
But yes, Balatro, real, real addictive game. It's hard to put down that one. it's real, ooh, just one more go. Where did 3 hours go?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I think, everything that's worth talking about this week.
Well then!
Time for this.
Hey there, check out the latest from Modest Bundle. Available this week, we've got 4th-rate art programs that have less features than Microsoft Paint, 600 hours of royalty-free music that constantly get flagged for DMCA takedowns, in genres such as Kind of Techno, the demo setting on a child's toy keyboard, lounge music, MIDI classics, and so many, many more. Try 29 AI-generated books about self-improvement, which you'll literally never read, and everybody's favourite, the Unity Asset Mega Bundle. Again, we know we've had this bundle on sale for the last 362 of 365 days, but we really don't want you to miss out on this absolute bargain. Come on, we're desperate, please. We'll even throw in a 10% discount to our Modest Choice monthly game subscription. It's 5 or 6 games delivered to you every month, and our marketing will make it look like they're always absolute bangers, but as soon as you sign up, you're going to get maybe 1 or 2 worth having games in 12 months, as long as you subscribe for that long, and everything else is just going to be absolute bargain basement crap. Modest Bundle, we're not like we used to be.
Oh, mate, really into the new like Soulsborne game, yeah.
Yeah.
I've finally given in and put difficulty settings in, though. I think that's really disappointing, you know. But, I've obviously like turned it up from normal. I'm not some normie. I'm not going to play on normal, you know. So I turned it up to, you know, have you got something to prove? But you know that wasn't hard enough. So you know, I did the setting where, you know, you don't get nearly as much armor and the enemies deal double damage. That difficulty level is called who do you think you're impressing? And then there's the hardcore mode where not only do you start with no armor and all the enemies can one hit kill you, but you are also, you know, potentially losing life every second. It's like ticking down. And that's called you're not impressing anyone. No one's impressed by, you know, how much you're dragging this out and making it hard for yourself. You're not better than anyone else just because you can do it on this level.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't like this with Wolfenstein, was it?
No.
So, what have you put in your eyes?
Oh, should we talk about the film we went and saw the other night?
We should.
So we saw a film the other day called Drive Away Dolls.
We did. It's very gay.
It's very gay. It's very good. Yeah, so the gist of the plot is, it's 1999, it's about to be the year 2000, and you've got 2 lesbians, one of whom is quite outgoing and one who's a bit reserved.
An odd couple.
Yeah, and for various reasons, they are going on a road trip across the country.
To Tallahassee, Florida.
Yeah, you know, they go to a service where it's like, hey, I need this car to go from here to here. Will you drive it? And, you know, it saves you having to rent a car and it gets someone's car where it needs to go. And at some point, they see some stuff in the back of this car that very quickly clues them in, we should not have seen this. And some people are after them because of what is in their car. Cue fun, silly lesbian road trip with bumbling Team Rocket level villains chasing after them.
Yeah, and getting progressively more browbeaten by the whole situation. Because they start off sort of fairly fresh-faced.
Yeah.
Like yeah, we turned up to get the car that we were supposed to collect. Oh no, why did you give the car to someone else?
They seem like scary, threatening people to be chasing you. And as the adventure goes on, they become a little more bumbling as things go. But yeah, it's just this silly, very gay, very fun little road trip slash run away from the crime people adventure.
With weird transition, weird, very 1970s psychedelic liquid art transitions.
Oh, some of those were visually fascinating.
I think the endless recurring pizza was probably one of the easiest to explain.
I mean, I was gonna go the doorway covered in penis and sperms that opened to a rotating skull.
Sometimes there's a rotating skull behind the penis door.
Sometimes there's a rotating skull behind the penis door. I think I said this to you as we were leaving, but one thing that was really refreshing about that film was it was really nice to see a film with sort of sapphic romance and sexuality that didn't take the sex too seriously. That was willing to be a bit silly and fun about sexuality.
You know, like sex actually is.
Yeah, you know, where someone's not afraid to crack a joke and have a little laugh at the situation in the middle of doing sex. And I thought that was really nice. It gave the sexual content in the film like a good... It felt like it was coming from the right place.
Yeah, it felt more natural, and I think it also managed... via that in some ways to avoid being male gazy,
yes.
As it very could easily have been in a film probably made in 1999 that was predominantly about lesbians that featured a decent amount of lesbian sex.
Yeah, it didn't feel nearly as male gaze as some lesbian fiction can, and that was really nice.
Yeah.
Also, I fucking love the reveal of what is going on.
Oh,
when the reveal comes, would not have guessed it, fucking perfect reveal for what the stakes of that film were.
Oh, yes.
It is.
It's something. And I had a really good time. It's not too long. It's visually fascinating. It does that interesting thing of being a film set in the 90s that still... has a lot of the aesthetics of the previous decades.
Mm.
Avoiding that whole, everyone remembers the 80s as being like neon and pop socks and athletic gear. And no one really looked like that. And none of the actual aesthetics were like that because they were all things that had been decorated in decades past.
Yes.
People forget how brown these things were. Yeah, and like a lot of the locations, like the dive bars they go to, that weird wooden panelling and...
Yeah.
Slightly naff neon signs.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a fun little story, and I think... I think you'd have a lot of fun watching it.
It's one of the more fun, silly, queer films I've seen in a while, and I very much recommend it.
More of this.
Yeah. What about you? What you put in your eyes this week?
That's pretty much it for me, really. It's not been a watch-heavy week. I mean, I've, again, been watching... We've mostly been playing Final Fantasy again.
We have, yeah. I've put a couple of things in my eyes this week I can talk about.
I mean, I have put things in my eyes, but it's mostly... I've been more putting it on in the background while I've been painting, so I'm leaving that for listening.
That's fair. Well, in that case, I watched another film this week.
Yes.
I watched a film called Imaginary, and this is...
This is the teddy bear one, right?
Yeah, this is a horror film... Where the premise, as presented by the trailer, I'll put it that way, is there is a step-parent who has just married someone who has existing kids and is not getting on great with the new kids, but is trying very hard to, and one of those kids has an imaginary friend. It's this little teddy bear. Mm. And this little teddy bear imaginary friend has... given the little child a list of things to do to be able to come and visit the imaginary teddy bear's world.
Treasure hunt!
And the list of things to do gets progressively more dangerous. I will say that at one point, it you know, the child is told to do something that will hurt and has to be stopped from slamming her hand down on a nail. And it is the story of this ominous little imaginary friend that... The story is more than that. I don't want to say
can't
much.
Can't explain it, but there is more to it.
There is more to it, and I think that they do a good job of... There's a couple of twists, and those twists of... Like, I knew something was up, and I knew something was going to be involving a character. I didn't see the nature of the twist coming, and I think it was pretty well done. I think that the... some of the more fantastical visual elements that are later introduced are very creative. I think there is an entire set of visual set pieces that are very, very cohesively made while being a little unreality, and I appreciate that. It is a fun, if kind of brainless, little film. Like, it's no, like, amazing thing that's going to change your life, but I had fun watching it, and I got on well with it. I thought it was well worth a watch. I also watched the first couple of episodes, and I say the first couple, literally like two episodes, of an anime that I just wanted to have a sense of what it was, because it's the anime that everyone's been talking about for a while, and has been the big thing of anime, and I just wanted to dip my toes in and get a sense of it. I watched the first couple of episodes of Jujutsu Kaisen.
I've heard of this.
I have heard of this too. All I knew of it was memes about the phrase domain expansion. I did not know what that meant. I still haven't arrived at what that means. I'll start with this. It's fucking gorgeously animated. It's nice. Some of the most money I've ever seen put into like a action slash horror anime. Mm-hmm. But the gist from like an episode, maybe two episodes in that I've got is... This is a world where there are cursed objects that, if properly sealed, can act as, like, demon deterrents.
Right.
But if the seal on them breaks, they kind of do the opposite. Demons come in seeking to find these objects and basically swallow them and become more powerful.
So it's like
demon powers.
It's fine until it starts to flake, and then, oh, you might be killing everyone
kind
instead
of
protecting.
It's good insulation until it starts getting out into the air, and then it's the opposite of good to have around you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a weirdly good apt metaphor. And there is there are these particularly dangerous demon artifacts that are the 20 fingers of this four-armed demon that was... just about defeated once in the past, but, like, is basically potentially could come back at any point. And these artifacts are, like, very, very big demon magnets, essentially. And there is this very athletic, it's not explained yet why this is the case, but I imagine it's something backstory related, like, weirdly athletic school teen who basically accidentally stumbles into... one of these cursed objects.
Right.
He runs an occult club at school. He finds this weird box with all the seals on it and is like, we should open this up at the occult club and see what the fuck's in here. And all fucking hell breaks loose.
Literally.
Like all his friends are at risk of being consumed by... the best way I can describe the monster design in this is halfway between H.R. Giger and Junji Ito.
Okay.
But, like, supremely smoothly animated.
Nice.
Like, very high frame rate, very high detail, Junji Ito, H.R. Giger, I can't process what I'm seeing abominations. And there's this guy who turns up who's basically like a demon hunter.
Right.
But, oh no, the demon hunter gets captured too.
Oh no.
And the school teen is basically like, hey, you've told me that like it's impossible to fight these things unless you have demon energy yourself. I have the finger. Swallows the finger.
Okay.
Gets powers that he can use to fight off the demons and save his friends. But... part of that very powerful demon with the 20 fingers that are spread around the world somewhere now lives in him. But he emotionally suppresses it down. He's like, nah, stop trying to take control of my body. No, get back in there. You're not taking control of me. And now the demon hunters are like, wait, you swallowed one of his fingers and got his powers, but he hasn't just instantly taken control of you. He hasn't instantly possessed you. This could be really good for us.
We will have to kill you eventually. Well, but for now, this is very good.
Well,
for us.
The first episode, like before you even have any context, starts with you have been scheduled for execution, and we have no context for why is. And like, you know, the second episode, I think it is, starts with basically, look, we're supposed to execute you because if we kill you while you have one of the demon fingers in you, that bit of the demon is dead forever. So if we kill you while you contain it, that bit of it of that demon can't come back. But you swallowed it and didn't get possessed, and that's rare. So we're gonna get you to eat more of those fingers, and like, hopefully this will look. Best case scenario, he never takes control of you, and like, we have a very powerful demon hunter in our ranks now.
Worst case scenario, we kill you when you've got five fingers in your hands.
Yeah, rather than having to find five people who can survive eating one of the fingers and killing all five of them, we can just like kill you with five fingers in you, like, you know. So, yeah, it's basically, we kill you now, or you swallow more fingers and, like, we hopefully don't kill you, but maybe kill you later. Dying not today seems like a good plan.
You could die with one finger in, or you could die with several fingers inside you.
Yeah, so now it's supernatural demon hunting, while a guy's occasionally, like, a face will crawl out of his face that is the demon inside him, trying to be like, nah, I'm gonna break out and take control. He's like, no, get back in there,
High school for you, just really bad skin.
it's a lot. There's a lot to try and explain. I promise it feels a lot more straightforward watching it. You sound like a crazy person trying to relay any of it.
Sound like you've got a demon finger in you.
Yeah, yeah. It's enjoyable. The visual design is stunning. It is a gorgeous anime to watch. I am very interested in the world building. Even if, yeah, trying to explain it is a lot. But I have enjoyed the first couple of episodes. I am curious where it's going. Mm. What about you? You watched anything else this week?
That's it for me.
I think that's it for me as well.
Well then.
Time for this.
Hello.
Yes?
We got a new sponsor.
Who's your new sponsor?
Well, do you sometimes do freelance work?
I do sometimes do freelance work.
Well, have you ever... Has this ever happened to you? Has this ever happened to you? You've done the work. You basically finished it.
Yeah.
You just... A little bit of polish. Maybe you'll be back in the office tomorrow. You'll be ready to finish it. And the client contacts you and they're like, Hey, could you maybe just... throw something else in there, like something we didn't mention. It wasn't in the spec, and we know that we're getting close to the deadline that we've been harassing you about for quite a long time, but you know, could you maybe throw a bit of extra stuff in there that's a little bit off?
I mean, if you'd said that at the start, it would have been fine, but now I'm gonna have to restructure the whole thing to fit this in there, because it like, none of the pacing I'd written like accounts for having to wedge this in there. Could you have told me any sooner than when it's basically finished?
Maybe they could. Maybe they couldn't. I don't know. I am not the one thing. But you know how you will have, at the start of the project, given them a quote for the work?
Yeah.
And you would be expected to stand by that.
I've agreed to do the work for the amount of money, and that's sort of the scope of the thing.
Well, this week's sponsor is just one more thing. .lol.net. It's freelance accounting software which automatically raises the price of a project every time the client drops a, just one more thing. Just one radical change to the thing.
Just one more thing. Can you like completely and utterly rewrite it to be about this instead?
Yeah, like
just a small change, right?
It accounts for the regular things, like, you know, maybe they wanted slightly different formatting.
Yeah.
Maybe they wanted a word changed or here, maybe some punctuation stuff. That's all accounted for, but this will really step up as soon as somebody goes, hey, I know we said the whole subject of the thing was blue frogs, but now could you give us a whole thing about the history of video games in Papua New Guinea?
That's fairly different. That just one more thing is quite a large just one more thing.
But it's the same. Surely it's all the same thing, right?
Oh, just one more thing.
.lol.net. Enter the code QNPS 298 and you'll realise how close we are to episode 300. Inside the boardroom of Supremacy Software.
Hi. So, I need some advice.
Sell. No buy.
No.
Fire someone.
Specific advice.
Hit someone.
So, you know, we have that series of sort of party fighting games with the crossover of all the characters from all our other games.
Yeah.
And, you know, since we made the very first one, there's like that one guy who knows how to make him real good.
Yeah.
And you know how we've been working him to the bone to the point that literally, like, he is developing, like, such bad arthritis in his hands from,
not only
coding the game.
That's a real
but
shame.
Doing all of the playtesting. Like, yeah. you know he playtests by, like, using two controllers at once to play two characters to do
the
playtesting.
Oh, I heard he could play four characters once. He uses his feet as well.
Oh, God, yeah. No, he does, like, multiplayer balance testing like no one.
Yeah, I kind of want to see if we could just maybe graft some extra arms in there. If we can, you know, graft enough bits to him, maybe we can get him to test the 64-player multiplayer online battle shooter thingy.
Well, see, this is the problem. He wants out.
Out of the basement?
He wants out completely.
He's not going to get out of the basement.
Well, I mean, he don't want to make more of these games. He's like, ew, I've been making them for like 30-plus years. Oh, I want to see my family. Ooh, I'm bored of making the same thing over and over and basically destroying my body and my mind to make these things.
Right.
I want to get out. I don't want to make them anymore.
Right. So we, you know, maybe electrify the chains until he stops that.
Well, I mean, he always has the option to get electrocuted and just keep not doing it. You know, I at this point, he's undergone so much pain making these games. Pain might not be a good motivator anymore.
Right. So you're thinking maybe some sort of hypnosis?
I mean, I would, but I'm worried about, like, does that impact his creative ability if we mess around with his brain too much?
Right.
And I was like, you know, maybe he's got, like, a family, like a wife and kids that we could, like, you know, put in danger and he would, you know, comply
and
keep them
safe. That sounds great.
But we haven't let him out long enough to have a wife and family.
Right.
And that's a problem.
Could we maybe, like, buy him one and they can be down there for, like, 6 months between DLC, and then we'll take them away, and we'll be like, they're in danger now, you formed a bond, and...
No, he's insisting, he just will not do it, he's just insisting he will not make more of them.
Can we clone him?
Legally, no.
When did that ever stop us?
I mean, I'm not saying it should stop us, let's talk to the guys in legal. Maybe they can find some workaround where it's like, we can put him on the paperwork as being the brother of himself, and, like, he appears on the paperwork to be two separate people.
You are a fucking genius.
I know.
I am an evil genius.
Yeah, you are.
So, what have you put in your ears?
Not a lot this week.
No?
It's been a big deadlines week, and that has meant lo-fi beats to relax and study to is all I've really had brain space for.
Just you and the lo-fi girl just tapping away.
Yeah, exactly. It's been, I need to write thousands of words in a day. Give me the music to just click-clack to.
Mm-hmm.
You've listened to some stuff, though.
I have. I've listened to the first 5 episodes of the Geekenders podcast.
Yes, a show that I've recently become aware of thanks to TikTok clips of it.
I became aware of it because you were getting fed TikToks of of highlights of this show. So this is Jesse Cox and Dodger. I was going to say Lee, but I don't think that's her surname anymore because she got married to Sam.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what Sam's surname is. Yeah. Who used to be on Co-optional podcast, which I listened to for a very long time.
Yeah.
Until one of the hosts was sadly lost. So, it's apparently that show, I sort of stopped listening pretty much immediately after that whole situation. And then apparently like a year later they just stopped doing the show at all. Or within 6 months they stopped doing the show at all.
It's a weird thing it must be a weird thing emotionally to keep doing a show when one of the main people from it passes away.
Yes.
The energy is going to inherently be different.
Yeah, I think so. Like, and I think immediately trying to fill that gap will probably feel very weird if you have been quite close to that person for, how long. Like, I'm going to say at least 7 or 8 years, possibly longer.
And this new thing seems very similar in concept, but with a rotating third seat. And, like, if nothing else, like, it has its own name, it's its own new thing, is a bit of distance to...
Yes.
To come to it from.
But it does seem to be having, like, a lot of the same people, because obviously yeah. it's still the same friends as the people who were on it originally. Although, I didn't know during episode 5, Dodger mentioned that she lives on a farm now, basically.
Yes.
And owns geese, which I think means that it is about time you two got together to form your plan to take over the world with shenanigans.
The goose farm can happen!
Goose farm can happen!
Oh! How did I not know about the geese?
I only today found out about the geese. And it reminded me of that beautiful animation. I can't remember what the person who does it is, but yes. The person who animates all the Cox and Crendor and used to animate all the co-optional stuff.
Yes, yes, the co-optional animated, I forget what the video is called, but it's the who owns a goose? Who owns a goose?
It's something about Geese Army and who owns a goose. Well, now we know who owns a goose. And the two of you can get together. And that was the episode you were on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm enjoying it so far. We've had 2 episodes with Crendor. Technically, they're only on episode 5, but there's a couple of uncounted episodes earlier on where it's just like, hey, we're getting a vibe for our setups, time of day we record, and what the format is, how that all works. And, apparently they got started sometime over UDP into the new year, and, yeah, we've got a good playlist coming together. And I'm interested to see who goes on there, because that is... I mean, co-optional was how I discovered you and Steph, because yeah. you both appeared as guests at different times on that show. And, for a while that was pretty much me all the time. I listened to, initially, the Game Station podcast, and then co-optional. And I think I talked last year about the fact that I'd sort of gone back and listened to a couple of episodes of that as just, like, nostalgia for, like, I remember liking this. This was a thing that I was very into for a long time. And, I have enjoyed it. Have you found the video?
I found it. It was the co-optional podcast animated Pet Wars.
Pet Wars.
Yeah, that sure was a thing. That video has, like, over 1 million views.
Yeah. I mean, it's very beautifully animated, and you and Dodger being menaces with geese.
Yeah. Well, those were the days.
Those were the days. I mean, they're still the days.
Yeah.
You're all just a decade older now.
Yeah. Yeah, that was... That animated was 8 years ago.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
It's been a while. Like 2019, I think, the show stopped entirely.
Yeah.
And after losing John in 2018, that is a thing I have listened to a lot of, and it's been great to pretty much do what I always used to do, which is like have it on in the background while I go about chores or stuff. And this week I've been painting minis, so it's been good to have on just long form people rambling about video games. And in fact, this, I think, sticks less to video games than co-optional ever did. They do talk a little bit about, like, things they've watched. Festive Movies was the most recent episode, because this was the one recorded, like, straight after UDP. So, it's been nice and quite comforting to go back to a thing and hear them talking about new stuff.
Yay!
Yeah. What else? Have you listened to anything else?
I think that's about it for me.
I think the only other thing we can sort of briefly recap on is the first 10 episodes of the Magnus Protocol.
Yeah.
So we're on a hiatus at the moment until early in April.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a few weeks to sort of gather ourselves and ponder about what's happened so far. How are you feeling about it, sort of 10 episodes in?
I think the first couple of episodes were very, very, very meta-narrative heavy.
Yes.
The stuff outside of the horror stories. I will reiterate what I said before. I think that there's a certain degree of the issue that the Adventure Zone had going into their second campaign, which is, at the end of the first Adventure Zone campaign, they'd built up to this huge, huge, big, sprawling narrative, And there was this sort of feeling that they had to jump into campaign two already at that point,
yeah.
rather than building up from a small start the way the first campaign did.
Yes, you're starting at 11 rather than working up to it.
Yeah, I think that, like, the Magnus Archives starts as largely focused on the individual horror stories and slowly builds in its wider world.
Yeah.
This felt like it needed to be a big world straight away, and that is a bit to take in.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, overall, I've had a little more trouble keeping straight who is who, what's what, because of that.
I am starting to get it now, but then I've also listened to all the episodes twice.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's like it's a big problem, but it's definitely something that a follow-up to an existing long-running narrative can have. I've enjoyed a lot of the individual horror stories. I think that we're starting to get just enough of a dip of our toes in of what this might be and what elements from the Magnus Archives might still apply and what might... Some interesting hints at what might be going on.
Mm.
I'm very curious about the ways that the horror is intersecting into the wider narrative a little now.
And also what's up with evil Mr. Blobby.
I'm so glad someone else acknowledges that Mr. Blobby is the spawn of evil.
It was so funny because I think we hadn't really... had anything in that episode, in this is episode 10, about Blobby directly, but the way the character was talking, I was like, this is such a Noel Edmonds analogue. And then it goes into, and then Mr. Bonzo, I think it is, in this.
Yes.
I was like, oh.
It's very specifically the way they were talking about, like, oh, well, we had this bit where we were pretending this was a famous children's character that everyone loved, and the joke was on the celebrities who wouldn't know this wasn't a real children's character.
Gotcha.
And I was like, that's fucking Mr. Blobby. I know Mr. Blobby's... Know thy enemy. I know Mr. Blobby's origins inside and out. I'll see him coming a mile off. Yeah. I recognise a Mr. Bonzo.
Oh, yes.
Oh, Mr. Bonzo. It's a great episode.
Oh yeah,
deeply unsettled me.
Yes, personally, that one was very, very personally directed. It felt like
that. It did. What about you? How are you feeling?
Yeah,
about
I'm really
it so far?
Enjoying it. I agree that I think the way it tried to squeeze in so much meta narrative early on was a detriment overall. But now that it has settled down a bit, if anything, like, now we're going... We're having, like, two characters a lot of.
Mm.
One character who's seemingly very interested in climbing... I was going to say corporate ladder, but
yeah.
It's a government job, so not really that. Climbing the civil service ladder. And that has gone some interesting ways. And almost by virtue of the fact that they've talked about the fact that this job has quite a high turnover, several people have been seen almost not at all, or were specifically the point of them was that they leave after the first couple of episodes, because that's why we had new people coming in, because other people were leaving the job.
Hmm.
And I understand that it is a way of trying to convey the whole... Yeah, this is a high turnover job, and yeah, the people do leave all the time because it is a lot to take when all the horrors of the world are occasionally being read out to you by a computer voice running on a Windows 95 computer that is somewhat sinister. But yeah, it's been a fascinating story, and I look forward to the rest of the series. I'm not sure. I can't even remember how long the first series is supposed to be. But, yeah, excited to see where we go from here and what else is happening. Because now there are sufficient threads that I'm like, I need to know. I need to know all of the things. I need to know what's happening next. So, yeah, I think April 11th is the next batch of episodes. So excited to see what happens there.
Yeah.
I think that's everything we listen to then.
Well then,
time for this.
Ooh.
Right, welcome everyone, welcome everyone. Welcome to the opening ceremonies for this year's business conference. I'm sure I'm sure you're all ready to get networking. We thought we'd do something a little different this year with the networking. Get you all sort of a bit more involved and engaged in things. So We've been collecting business cards from all of you at the door, making sure we have plenty of them to go around. So time to announce business card booster packs. A new way of randomizing your networking.
Ooh.
Open a pack. Will you get a CEO's business card? A person in the same field of business as you? Every pack contains at least three basic email addresses you could have simply found on Google. Trade with other attendees to get the business cards you need, and maybe meet some new people in the process.
Oh, hell yeah, it got shiny.
Yes, they paid extra for the embossing on that one. Extra business cards available for a small premium purchase up at the front after the talk has finished. This is how you do business. This is why we're running the event, not
business. Hello, hello, welcome, come in, please sit yourselves down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My name is Suzette, and I will be teaching you the class today. Now, you, what's your name?
Brian.
Okay, Brian, if you could tell us in the event that your government was attempting to raise the pension age, what do you think that you would do in that? How would you come back?
I'd proper stand up to my government. I'd write a harshly worded letter to the Sun.
Okay.
The newspaper, you know, the one.
Yes, I didn't think you meant the large ball of hydrogen. Okay, and you, what's your name, please?
Dave.
Okay, Dave, and what would you do in the event that, let's say they were going to, cut all of your, rights? They were going to stop you being able to do any workers' rights. You were not going to be able to be safe in your work.
I'd call Talk Radio, have a real moan at them.
Okay.
Let my feelings be known.
Okay, now I think one more. Well, you there. What would you do in the event, say, that they were trying to get rid of the rights of let's say you, your workers' rights, your rights to set numbers of hours at work, and your right to a safe working environment?
Well, as a proper English person, I'd just shout at strangers on the internet. That'd probably fix it.
Okay, so none of that, and also none of getting radicalized by the right wing. I don't recommend any of that.
That's our favorite thing.
Well, you're wrong. So, in the event that your government is doing terrible things, what you really need to do is, for example, taking to the streets with a selection of Molotov cocktails and a portable barbecue. Brian, do you like barbecue?
Well, yeah, I like barbecue.
Well, and hanging out with your friends?
I do, yeah.
Well, how would you like to stick it to the man and stand up to oppression with a barbecue?
I do like a barbecue. What was that about Molotovs?
Well, Molotov cocktails as well, to make sure that the police really understand that you mean business. For example, also you could deliver manure directly to the doors of power. Imagine turning up in Downing Street. Rishi has done something. Maybe he's taken away your right. He's demanded that you work a 90-hour work week with no breaks. Destroyed the NHS. Your old mum, she's. She's had all of her tea and biscuits taken away.
Oh, yeah.
Then, you know, you just drop manure on Rishi's doorstep. You take no crap. You deliver, in fact, the crap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You take the crap with you and you leave it there. Exactly. It's something like that. Or, you know, attack the institutions who are causing the issues instead of this week's scapegoat minority.
Oh, that's novel. What, go after the people with the power?
Exactly.
And not just people I've been told are scary.
Exactly.
Now, that's a real game changer, that.
Exactly. Do you think maybe all of you here could perhaps start a riot in the event that the government tries to step down on you and, you know, maybe show them that there are many, many more of you than them?
Yeah.
Something to think about. And the barbecue. Do you know what I want to see more of?
What do you want to see more of?
Brochure Justice Warriors.
But I should test his worries.
Yeah.
Right, Larry.
Right, Barry. How you doing?
Oh, mate, you know, bit tired. You doing all right?
Oh, I'm doing all right, doing all right. You know, I've been following some cis nonsense going on, though.
Oh, yeah, what are they up to now?
Well, this particular bit of cis nonsense. Bit of wind back before I build into it.
Right.
You know how trans people are expected to live up to gendered stereotypes or not be seen as valid as trans people often by cis people?
Yeah, and usually by the same people who were like, well, no, you're being a stereotype.
Yeah, exactly. The whole double standard that exists. We, you know, this is not news to either of us. The whole like, hey, you want to get access to estrogen? Well, you've got to turn up to every doctor's appointment in a dress, wearing makeup, and you know, etc. And then also, then those same sort of people go in. Why are you acting as if wearing a dress and makeup makes you a woman? You know, it's the If you don't do it, you're not trying hard enough. If you do it, you're being a stereotype. I've seen a real flare-up of this same little bit of hypocrisy recently, because it sort of all spawned up around a creator, Dylan Mulvaney, as
the Bud Light person.
Trans woman's recently put out a song. It's a silly little pop song about, you know, having been transitioning for about 2 years, and about, like, the first 2 years of her transition journey.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, it's a little bit of a superficial, little silly, little pop song. It's no different from anything for, like, you know, girls just want to have fun, or, right, you know, yeah, material girl, or, you know, there was a trend that, you know, about a year ago of female musicians making what they call bimbo core songs about, like, hey, I just want to be a head empty and, you know, enjoy pink. And, like, you know, a genre that has existed, you know, in music within cis womanhood for a long time. And, you know, trans woman also made a song that's, you know, it's a little bit about stereotypes, but it's no more stereotypical than any other song in the sort of that sort of genre.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely got fucking piled on by cis people going, oh, you're being a mockery of a woman. Do you think this is all that womanhood is? Blah, 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 yeah, blah. You know, and, like, you know, this, it was very clear that this song was not meant to be a universal experience of womanhood. It was named after a series of videos she'd been doing about her transition and celebrating the little moments of gender-affirming joy that kind of define the first couple of years of transition.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's a lot of experimentation. You know, there's a reason they call it your second teenage experience.
It's that period of going through, like, being able to do the gendered things that you never got a chance to do as a child or a teenager, and having those little formative experiences that, you know, maybe you're not having at the same time as other people your age group, but they're still kind of they're still kind of personally relevant. Yeah, you know, whether you enjoy the song or not, it was a harmless little, you know, song about here is what, you know, the moments that have meant something to me over the first 2 years.
Yeah.
Being treated as if, like, it was the first song by a woman to ever, you know, mention makeup or shopping. As if, you know, no woman has ever gone, I enjoy makeup and shopping in a little song about womanhood. And it just really got me thinking about that whole double standard.
Ultimately, what they want is complete erasure. So it's the whole damned if you do, damned if you don't forever, until they can just go, well, now you have to go away, right?
Exactly. If you have to be a stereotype to be seen to be trying, but have to not be a stereotype, you know, not be enjoying it too much, because then you're a stereotype. There is no fucking winning in that situation.
None whatsoever. Yeah. But they don't want you to win, and that's kind of the point,
Exactly. But you know what? Fuck it. Like, you know, I will be the first to say trans people should have every right to, you know, revel in the same things that cis people revel in, even if those things are sometimes a little lighthearted and superficial, because, you know, those are important things, you know. Life is made of that
this
stuff.
This is the whole thing right now, though, isn't it? This is the whole anti-cringe, isn't it?
I
think it probably falls well within that, you know, from a slightly different perspective. But the whole, oh no, that's cringe. You're doing that. You're doing a thing you enjoy. You're talking about the joy that something has brought you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Trans people should be allowed to be a little bit joyously cringe.
Everybody should, be allowed to be a little bit joyously cringe.
Exactly, exactly.
Fancy hug, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
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 Good hug, mate. Good hug.
Good hug.
Right, I think I'll pop the kettle on.
Oh, sounds lovely.
Nice, nice.
So, Laura.
Yes?
You do things and those things are in the internet and people would like to find those things. Can you direct them to the things that you do?
I can direct them to the things I do. The things I do are at Laura K. Buzz pretty much everywhere on the internet. Laura K. Buzz on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, TikTok, Blue Sky, Mastodon, Patreon. That's the one that pays the bills. Things I've got coming up this week. I have an accessibility episode about a game called The Veil. That is an audio-only first-person sort of medieval adventure game that's really interesting. There will also probably this week be a video chat between me and Arevia talking about the PlayStation Access controller now that it's been out for a couple of months and a couple of months in, what is the impression of that hardware? So look forward to that. Probably some other stuff too. Laura K. Buzz, you'll find the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Me? Well, I don't have your unified branding, but I do have a link tree. It's linktr.ee/janiac, J-A-N-E-I-A-C. You can find music I make, t-shirts I design, things I've written, all sorts, all of those things. And you can help support me at patreon.com/stonedmonkeyradio. For as little as $1 a month, it can help me justify all of the hard works. And, that would be lovely. Laura?
Yeah?
I think that's everything, so will you sing us out, please, dear?
Until next time, be a stranger.